There we go.
There, it's official.
Okay.
There you go. Now you can talk.
Great. Okay. Welcome everybody. I'm actually thrilled that we have as many people on the line as we do, and from as many places in Canada as we do. This is really fantastic. I wanted to let you guys know, if you didn't see the bulletin that went out, that the CCB Toronto Visionaries chapter usually has a very, very full social calendar with many different kinds of activities going through any given month. We have canceled essentially all of it because of the restrictions and closures. In some cases, because the venues that we access shut down, and in other cases just because it's the right thing to do to be part of the effort to slow down the spread of the virus. So we are going to be offering a number of opportunities through the course of the next few weeks for people to connect socially through calls like this one on Zoom. The GTT program will continue to run once a month on its regular schedule via Zoom. But we will also be trying to organize our coffee and conversation group as a Zoom call. That's a casual chat that occurs the first Monday of each month. So this month it's April 6th, and it runs from 10 a.m. till noon Eastern Standard. The host for that will be Denise Chamberlain. She's the one who usually runs that group as a face-to-face meeting over a cup of coffee. So brew up a cup of coffee and join the call. Mm-hmm. We'll also be running our book club via Zoom because we normally meet at one of the local Toronto Public Libraries, and of course they're all shut down. So we'll be running the April book club. The March book club is canceled for a number of reasons, in part because the book wasn't available in time, but the April session on the 15th will run from 10 a.m. till noon as a Zoom call as well, and we'll just continue to run that as often as we can. And of course, the GTT thing will run as usual. I wanted to mention, we had put out an announcement about a week ago indicating that we were, I guess it was a little more than a week ago, indicating that we were hosting a concert in April with the Michael Arnowitz Quartet, and that obviously has been canceled. We'll postpone that show and try to mount it sometime in the summer once the restrictions.
So the tickets are still valid?
What's that?
The tickets are still okay?
What we're going to do is we're going to refund the tickets and we'll just set it up as a whole new show. So if you have a ticket, if any of you have a ticket for that show, just connect with the person who sold you the ticket and they'll give you a refund.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I can't remember if I bought one or not.
Okay.
I usually do. I can't remember now. Yeah.
You should have a physical ticket if you bought one.
I probably didn't then.
So hunt for that if you can find it. And but the idea is we're just going to refund the handful of people who did buy tickets before all the restrictions were put in place. And as I said, we will reorganize and rebook that show for sometime later once the restrictions are lifted. The coffee and conversation group I mentioned running on April 6th, we're not clear exactly how many times a month we're going to run that. It's usually a once a month thing, but in these exotic times, we may try to run that twice a month or even three times a month, just to give people an opportunity
every day
connect with others. Wouldn't that be lovely? The longer this goes on, the more isolated I think people are going to start feeling. And, you know, it's hard not, you know, for people who are social and mobile to not be able to get out and just sit in a coffee shop with a friend or something. You know, you can't do any of that now.
Nope.
So, in fact, Jason was saying before the meeting started that there are even recommendations that, you know, people shouldn't go over to other people's houses for dinner. You know,
well, that's not good for people who are going to be in isolation. That's going to,
Yeah, I know.
Does he even think about
these
that?
These are very difficult. Difficult
yeah,
time.
But the thing is, that's the only thing that actually, I'm sorry, but works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Even partial quarantines don't work 100% effectively. You need this kind of overarching, sort of deep restriction in order to actually slow this thing down. And the only way to keep from completely having the healthcare system explode is to do this. So I don't think any of these decisions are being taken lightly. I know that, our executive, it was a pretty easy decision in the sense that, it's the right thing to do. And most of our venues evaporated anyway, but, it just makes sense to do this. So we'll all just have to hunker down and do the best we can and connect by technology, which is, one of the great
way to do it.
Yeah, one of the great things about doing this group. So
We had a few people talking over each other there.
Yeah.
If nothing else comes out of this thing, I'll have at least gotten to learn more about the technology.
Exactly.
For sure.
There's always a silver lining, right?
Yeah. At least we have it, if this shit had happened 20 years ago, I'm not sure it would have been the same.
Yeah, it would have been harder.
Yeah. So on that happy note, I will turn this back to Jason. I don't think there's anything else I need to share at this point, unless you guys just want to talk about your own experiences a little bit. As Jason said, this is a pretty wide open session. So,
may I make a comment? Dave Clement here in Winnipeg. For people who want to have more interaction, there is out there a thing called... called VIP conduit. Okay, this is a visually impaired person conduit. It's a an online sort of like the old message board kind of systems. They have programs that run every day. Like there's a morning coffee group. There's a morning Bible study group. There's a sessions with music, whatnot. It's run through the teamworks,
team talk platform.
Okay. And there are people who join these different events during the day. There are some that are daily. There are some that are weekly, some that are bi-weekly, all kinds of topics. And they're kind of an open discussion thing, something like what we're doing right now, but using the team talk platform. I think the website is vipconduit.com. And if people who want more interaction with more people on different, conversations or specific talks, that kind of thing, you might want to look into that.
Yeah.
You'd need a mic. Joe, do you have a laptop or desktop?
I have a desktop and I don't have a mic.
Yeah, mics are cheap. You can get a headset.
I can't get it now.
No. I know you could, but I'm saying you could possibly have somebody help you order one online. You can order one from Best Buy or whatever. You might be a delay in getting it, but you can certainly get it. Mics, $20-$30 will get you a half decent mic. So yeah, it's something to think about. Or you can use your phone. TeamTalk may have a phone app. I'm not positive about that. So
I hope it's easier to use than Instacart because I'm having trouble with it. Yeah. I'm just learning how to use phone apps now because I have to.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, thanks for that, Dave. I didn't actually know. I certainly know about TeamTalk, but I didn't know about that particular service. So that's useful.
On the topic of other opportunities to connect, Albert, I think you had some things that were coming up. Did you want to just roughly sketch what you know so far, Albert?
Albert.
He muted himself.
Albert. Hold on. Wonder if I can unmute him.
Oh, you can do that from your end? I love listening to people work.
Sorry, you guys, I was muted.
Yep, we know.
And then there was an error message on the screen, and I was frantically trying to find the button. I hate Zoom on the iPhone. I don't know why I did this.
It can be challenging.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, sorry, you were looking for me?
Yes, before the meeting got started, you had mentioned that there were a number of opportunities coming up over the next little while for people to connect via Zoom conference to a variety of other GTT things and groups that are coming up.
Great. Yeah, no, thanks, Ian. We're doing much the same as what the Toronto Visionaries group is doing. We're just providing additional opportunities. So every Wednesday, starting yesterday, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, we're going to have the GTT Zoom room open for just a kind of an open chat, you know, hoping to stick around technology, adjustment to vision loss, that kind of thing. So we'll
that's
have
a,
that.
That's the CCB National thing, right?
Yeah, it's good. It's part of the GTT program. So it'll be that that same code that we always use for the GTT National call. We use it for the GTT beginners call. And so we're going to do this weekly thing. New Westminster meeting is going to go online this month. We may do the GTT Vancouver call online. So we're going to throw a bunch of things out there. So keep an eye on www.gttprogram.blog. And that's where we'll post everything that we've got going. So keep an eye on that website. You can register your email at the bottom of that web page, and then you'll get every one of our posts in your inbox. We post some interesting articles about technology. We post upcoming meetings and activities and that sort of thing. gttprogram.blog.
And as far as other, it's Jason here, as far as other things that are going on, my partner Christine is thinking of, and this isn't happening yet, but it might be happening, is thinking of doing some things via Zoom. Possibly a trivia event, you know, various things. So it's there are things, you know, there are lots of people working on lots of different things. So just, yeah, keep an eye on it. In Toronto, we've got a mailing list that I think most people in Toronto are on called Torchout, that gets, you know, things get announced on there. So just keep an eye out for what, you know, anything upcoming, cause we're all trying to get through this together. So does anybody have any, usually with these meetings, the first thing we do before the main presentation is we kind of go around and see if anybody has any technology questions, anything bothering you, anything you want the collective brain of the group to see if we can sort out for you. Anybody have any burning questions?
I have a question, it's Tracy.
Sure.
Would I post, or is there a place I can post to see if I can find any book ports that are out there that people aren't using?
Book ports. Yeah, I mean, there used to be a blind buy and sell group. Okay. I don't know if that's still around, though.
I can Google it and see.
Does anybody know, like, sort of a used equipment type of thing?
Yeah, but I think it's for the UK.
We have one. We started one, Jason, the CCB. We have I think it's called CCB-buy-sell-trades@groups.io. So I can send that information to Ian. You can circulate it to the group if anybody wants to get on there and ask for whatever they want or offer up whatever they're selling.
That'd be great. Thank you.
And yeah, we'd be happy to do that.
Yeah. Can you put a note out to the Torchout list saying, hey, anyone have any equipment?
Sure, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what, I mean, like Blind Bargains in the US, like they're out of the US, but they do they have a classified section where people can put things that they're selling. So I haven't seen any book boards on there, but it's worth a look.
Sometimes it's, you just have to put it out there and someone say, hey, I have one of those I'm not using.
Yeah. Okay. And you want the book port, the like the same as the Plex Talk, right?
Yes, but like, I want the book port version. I'd prefer, but I don't know if I get any, but I just want to put the word out there just in case.
For sure.
A Zoom comment for folks?
Yeah.
If I may, Dave, again in Winnipeg. Three hints that I've learned the hard way with Zoom. I'm running off my iPhone, and there I will turn on Do Not Disturb when I go into a Zoom session so that you don't get interrupted by calls and messages and notifications. I also plug into power so you don't get disturbed by those low power messages that pop up and mess you up when you're in there. So those two things make it easier, I think, when you're actually using Zoom on an iPhone, okay, to be consistent. The other thing I've seen is that if I'm on the iPhone and I stay in the Zoom app, all these messages about people signing in and signing out and everything come up. And I've found that if you just like go back to your home screen, leave Zoom running, it works in the background. But if you go back to the home screen, or in my case, I'm usually keeping notes in the Notes app, those additional messages don't come up. You just get the pure feed from the Zoom meeting. So those three things are making it a lot easier for me to work with anything that I'm doing through Zoom.
I have a question about Zoom.
Sure.
What's the advantage? What are the pros and cons of having using the Zoom app as to calling in?
The audio is quite a bit better. So if you call in using the Zoom app or an app on your computer, the audio quality is quite a bit better, like what you hear.
But I called in.
Right. Yeah, I know. So what I'm saying is if you connect using the Zoom app on your phone, the audio quality is quite a bit better than the phone, like when calling in via the phone number.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
There is one other potential benefit of using the app. When you're calling in from a standard telephone line, okay, sometimes the phone number that you use for some of the Zoom meetings are not where you think they are. For example, your meeting might be actually being hosted out of New York, or maybe it's coming from wherever the server is that you end up using. And if you don't have a phone plan that gives you like free long distance in North America, you could end up with a tidy little long distance bill if you're not careful.
Yeah.
So that's one other advantage, I think, of using the app.
Is it easy to set up?
It is pretty easy. Yeah. I haven't done the Zoom. Yeah. You just have to sign in using your Zoom account. You don't have to have a Zoom account to join meetings. I think that's only to host meetings. So it's just if you do a search on the App Store for Zoom, when you go to the Zoom link from your phone, I believe it just gives you an option to start the meeting in the app. I don't know specifically because I haven't done it in quite a while. I tend to do it on my computer, but so that's how you do it. One thing I was going to mention too earlier is one of the things that we're noticing, and we're seeing this during the workday at CNIB because we're all working from home now. The telecom system seems to be getting fairly overloaded. And we're seeing this during the day. So we've had a lot of reports of calls being dropped. We've had issues with our, like the conferencing system that we use at work being overloaded. So people can't get through on the phone numbers occasionally.
Happened through a balance, happened with balance too.
What's that?
It happened with balance too. So I didn't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I think what's happening is so many people are working from home now. And, you know, obviously making phone calls, that the telecom system is having a little bit of trouble you know, keeping up with it. So one of the things that somebody suggested is calling if you're going to be doing a conference call on the phone, start it a little bit after the hour, because everybody's calling into conference calls and things right on the hour. And so even waiting, you know, 5 minutes past the hour can help if you're having trouble getting through. So just something, to be aware of.
This overload is a real thing. Marla was telling me just yesterday that her company normally, they run off a central server for North America for all of their offices in North America. And they normally have maybe 100 people working remote and connecting to the server that way. They had 860 people working remote, and the server was just crawling. So this is a real thing. Yeah.
So just something to be aware of. There's not a ton you can do about it, but just something to be aware of if you're having a little bit more trouble getting phone calls and things to go through. Anybody else have any questions, comments, critiques?
Something, Casey.
Yeah, go for it.
So not to be a downer and talk about taxes, but one of the things that I came across was that tax season has been extended, which is great for everyone.
Yes.
But the other thing that sort of brought me into focus for this discussion is how do I get my documents to my accountant or to whoever's doing my taxes and not sending them by email? So email is pretty much the worst thing you can do in terms of security, in terms of sending one. So I actually learned how to use OneDrive for those of you who have Office 365, and it's pretty neat and it's pretty easy to use. So Jason, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that, but I can get into detail at some other time.
Keep on charge there.
Okay. So OneDrive is if people are familiar with Dropbox, it's sort of similar. It's kind of the Microsoft alternative to Dropbox. One thing you can do about taxes and what I do is I use TurboTax, and it is quite accessible. And one of the nice things about TurboTax is it will actually connect to the CRA for you and suck in all of your documents. So like when I do TurboTax, I just tell it, okay, go to the CRA and get my stuff. And it goes and it grabs my T4 slip, it grabs my, you know, any investment slips that I've got. It just pulls them in automatically, which can be really, you know, which is really useful. So it's also something to keep in mind. And then the TurboTax web interface is quite accessible. I haven't used it this year, but I used it the last few years, and it works quite well.
A really good idea.
Yeah.
So, sorry, one other thing about OneDrive I wanted to mention is that you can actually password protect the files, and you can actually have the link expire, so it doesn't have to stay open all the time, and you don't have to move your documents around.
So you're saying through OneDrive, you could link a document, you can share a document with another person?
Yep. Cool. It doesn't have to be your taxes. You can share a document with somebody else, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So, yeah, and it works well. It works, it works quite well. And also, pretty much, if you have a Windows 10 account, like if you have just a Microsoft account for Windows 10, you have OneDrive. You don't have as much storage as if you have an Office 365 account, but you do have OneDrive. It's included. So I can't remember how much storage you get. I know with the Office 365 account, I think you get a terabyte. I don't remember how much you get with just a Windows 10 account. Okay. Amra, was that, did you have anything else? Or was that?
Nope, nothing else from my end.
Okay, cool.
Jason,
anybody else?
Ian.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention to folks the CCB's national newsletter Visions that comes out just about once a month. I think there's 8 or 9 editions all through the year. Includes a tech tip thing from the folks in Edmonton, the GTT group in Edmonton. Albert, you may know a little bit more about this, but it's called Windows from the Keyboard. And it's basically a blog post that comes out once a week by a guy named Jerry Chevalier, and he posts just keyboard tips for people who are keyboard users to navigate around various Windows functions and other kinds of desktop functions. So it's a useful thing to know about. It's available through the GTT program site. And I just did a quick Google right now, GTT Edmonton blog, and I got it first hit. So that's another little resource if you're used to using keyboard shortcuts and keyboard commands. It's a really handy sort of list of tips, and there's a backlog. You can go through back and check out the previous tips that they've published.
Is that you, Ian?
Yep.
Yeah. So, Ian, I'll make that part of what the information I send you, because Jerry has been doing these since October. So there's a long list of them, and he's going to continue to do it throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And they're every Wednesday morning. But there's a category called Windows from the Keyboard Tips. So if you just grab the link to that category, that's all you have on the screen is tip after tip after tip all the way through. So it is a really great resource that Jerry's put together for us. So I'll send you the link to that category.
That would be fantastic, Albert. Thank you. And I know that you know, not all tips will be useful to all people, but it's you know, if you just sift through that list once, you can pick out the ones that you think you're going to use and just jot them down somewhere. That's
and the beauty of it, Ian, is if you're a pretty good computer user, and if you're using your shortcut keys, they're all the level one, like at the beginning of every one of his tips is a level one heading. So if you just keep typing the number one on your number row, you'll just go from level heading one to level one, like all the way through the list. So you don't have to read every line of the whole page.
That's handy too, yeah.
Yeah, you structured them very well.
That's awesome. Anybody else?
So Ian, this is Samara. I just wanted to find out what exactly is Google Books? I mean, Chromebooks.
That is a beautiful segue into our main topic for today. I'm going to hand it back to Jason for that, Sunila. Thanks.
I'm going to tell you all about that, or as much about it as I know. So we'll start that in a minute or two. I wanted to just mention, just for interest's sake, I was on AMI Audio yesterday. Talking about some new software that I've written to allow a blind person to use flight simulator software. So it's a bit of a niche thing, I understand that, but it's been a lot of fun to write it, and it's my first major coding project. People often say the best way to learn to code is to do it, and the best way to do it is to find something you want to do. So I've always been a bit of an aviation nut, so I've been writing this software for almost a year now, and I'm finally at the point where I can sort of talk about it because it's working halfway decently. So if you have a look back at the Kelly and Company archives from yesterday, it's in the gaming segment that they did from 3:15 to 3:30. So just for interest sake, it's there if people are interested.
Okay, thanks.
So, all right, any other quick questions? Or if not, I will sort of jump into things here.
I say jump.
Jump? Whee! Jump. Okay. All right, so I am here. What I thought we wanted to talk about, and this was, this idea came to us because somebody asked this question in a meeting, in last month's meeting. I don't remember who it was, but somebody asked the question about, the question was specifically about Chromebooks, but I wanted to sort of do a bit of a session and talk about sort of the alternatives to Windows. So most of us use Windows, most of us are using Windows 10, but there certainly are other options out there, and I wanted to talk about what those are. Now, to be completely and absolutely fair, I am a Windows user, been one for years. I have used the other platforms, but I haven't used them as extensively as I have Windows. So I'm going to tell you what I know. If there's somebody who wants to jump in and say, you know, you're totally wrong, or, you know, I do things this way or whatever, feel free to do that. I'm going to talk about the Mac and I'm going to talk about Chromebooks. And for the Chromebook, I can actually give you a little demonstration because I have one sitting here. I don't have a Mac sitting here, so I can't give you a demo on that. But so why would you want to get something other than Windows? Well, the Mac and Chromebook both have built-in screen readers and built-in screen magnifiers. So, and Windows does as well, which is the Windows Narrator system. But arguably, the options on Chromebooks and Macs are a little more developed. They've had more time to do it. On the Mac, the screen reader's been around since, somebody may have to correct me here, but I think it's been something like, it's over 10 years, I think, now.
Easily more than 10 years.
Yeah, I think it might be something like 15 years. It's ever since Mac OS version 10.4, which was called Tiger at the time. And we're now at, what are we at now? 10.15 now? The screen reader on the Mac is VoiceOver, which is what, if you're using an iPhone, will be very familiar to most of you. So if you're using an iPhone, the learning curve to use a Mac may not be quite as steep. A lot of the same gestures that you're used to can be done on the Mac, on the Mac's trackpad, which is like the mouse pad on the Mac you use to control the system. It also has a whole bunch of hotkeys that you can use to move around the system. And the screen reader is built in. You don't have to pay for anything. As soon as you know, you can walk up to any Mac anywhere and just, you know, hit a key and it'll start talking. So to get a Mac talking, you hold down the command key, which is, if you're looking at a Mac keyboard, it'll be in the same place where the alt key would normally be on a Windows keyboard. So you would hold down command and press F5, and then the Mac will just come up and start talking to you. So same voices that you're used to on the PC. Where the Mac really, the major strengths of the Mac, I would say, are anybody that's doing music production, anybody that's doing things like audio editing. There's some really, really good apps for the Mac that do that. And honestly, just anybody who just doesn't like Windows. there are people out there that just don't like Microsoft for whatever reason, and maybe they prefer Apple as a company, and they just want to use a Mac. Now, the downside of using a Mac is they are fairly expensive. The cheapest MacBook I think starts at $900. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's about the low end. The most expensive Mac machine you can get is the Mac Pro, which is, well over 5,000. So there's definitely quite a range. All of your major, like you've got, you know, word processing on the Mac, you can get Microsoft Office for the Mac. It works quite well. The Mac has its own built-in or its own included Office software for the word processor. It's called Pages. Their spreadsheet is called Numbers. And one of the things that people tend to not like about the Mac, especially if they're transitioning from Windows, is the Mac is, there's a, the keyboard shortcuts tend to be, there's a lot of keys. So you have to hold down a lot of keys and press a lot of keys to do things that on Windows, you might be able to do with fewer keystrokes. So, something to be aware of as far as that. Apple does have accessibility documentation available for the Mac. There used to be an email list called Mac Visionaries. I think it's still around. It's a support list for Mac for blind Mac users. And full disclosure, I owned a Mac for a while. I found that I went back to Windows because there was more stuff that I wanted to do that I could do easier on Windows. And that was, I got my Mac back in 2010. So it's been quite a while and a lot of things have changed since then. So like I said, I don't currently own a Mac. But that's the thing. Now, again, there are people that don't like Apple either. So,
some people don't like them or anything.
It's Ian. I know that back in the day when Apple and Microsoft were going toe-to-toe, that there were compatibility issues when you tried transferring files. That's disappeared now, right?
That's disappeared now, yeah. I mean, Apple Pages will read Word document files. Microsoft Office runs on the Mac now. Okay. So they're all,
they're playing nice.
They're playing nice. They're not. I won't say they're one big happy family because they're not. But they definitely are playing much nicer. The Mac will connect to Windows networks now. So if you've got a Windows network at your office, the Mac will work. Just for interest's sake, at CNIB, we're starting to roll out a program where we will allow people to use Macs if they want to. So if somebody comes in and says, I like the Mac better for accessibility, I'm just more comfortable with it. Instead of wanting a Windows machine, if they're working for us, they want a Mac. It's something that we are, we're rolling out, being prepared to do, which we weren't necessarily in the past. We were sort of primarily a Windows, Windows shop.
That's for CNIB employees, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's various types of Mac machines. So you've got the Mac, just laptops. There's the MacBook Air, which is the really, really thin and light one. The MacBook Pro, which is the slightly more expensive, starting from slightly more expensive to a lot more expensive. And then you've got the iMac, which is not a laptop. That's sort of the desktop form factor. And then all the way up to the Mac Pro, which is the great big, big brother of all of them. It's also the most expensive. I don't think anybody here would need a Mac Pro. They're much more designed for like high-end graphics, high-end audio, music, really high-end stuff. So I wouldn't say it's something that most people would need. So I think that, like I said, and I don't have one I can demonstrate for you, but does anybody have any questions about that stuff so far?
It's Marcy. I just want to make a comment that on the Mac, I'm stuck at I'm stuck at High Sierra, so I'm two operating systems below the current one. But Mac, if you have a Mac and you have an iPhone, they work better together.
Absolutely.
And the iTunes on the Mac, up until, I know it's being split in Catalina, but before Catalina, iTunes on the Mac is fantastic. iTunes on Windows is,
also true.
Exactly. Thank you.
Also very true.
And I love my Mac I used to use it for music. The mail program is great. Mac Mail it's like the mail program on your phone, slightly, pretty much. And it's just, I don't know. there are certain things, but there are still things that I would rather do on Windows. And I don't know if that's because I don't like the keyboard on my Mac as much, because it doesn't, the Air doesn't have a number pad, so, and it doesn't have end and home keys. So when Jason was saying that there are sometimes you have to hit three or four keys to get one thing, page up, page down, home and end are those kinds of Windows keys that you have to go, you have to sort of jump through hoops to get them to work on a Mac for whatever reason.
No, it's true. And one of the things that I've known people to do is you can actually run Windows on a Mac.
What? And I've never been able to figure out why you would want to do that.
Because actually the Mac can be a bit more, like, less susceptible of, well, that's what they say. You know, I'm skeptical on this. It's less fragile, sort of, to viruses.
But if you're using Windows, you're...
But it bugs less. Like, it really does. Like, honestly.
Oh, I agree. So, but then if you put Windows on it, you're opening up that vulnerability again. Because now you're using Windows. So I don't know if the Mac's, you know, if the Mac's lack of vulnerability to viruses as an operating system is going to help you if you're running Windows.
It won't. And what about... But what some people will do, because let's say that there's software that they want to use that either isn't available on Mac or isn't, you know, maybe isn't accessible on Mac or whatever, you can actually run Windows on them for now. I think this actually might change because Apple has announced they're going to be releasing Macs with their own chip. So instead of using an Intel processor, they're going to use their own chip. And once that happens, I think we're going to lose Windows on the Mac. I think that that may not work anymore. We'll see. I think we're a year or two.
The only reason that I've heard people wanting to run Windows on a Mac is because either there's a game or a piece of software that will not run on Mac. It needs a Microsoft operating system to actually run that particular program, and so they'll create a synthetic Windows operating system within the Mac landscape and run the program through that.
Yeah, there's actually two ways to do it. You can do that, which is called using a virtual machine. Mm-hmm. And there are two I think, well, three, but two main packages that do that. One is called Parallels, and one is called
Fusion.
Yeah, one is called VMware Fusion.
Yeah.
And it works. There are issues with it, but it works. The other way is to use something called Boot Camp. And what that does is you actually install a Windows on your Mac, and then when you boot your Mac, you select which operating system you want. So at that point, you're only running Windows or only running Mac OS. There's different ways to do it. But it's an option. I'm just letting people know that it's an option.
Is it possible to like run like Google, like basically having your Mac transform into a Chromebook?
So yes, I think. And now you're going to make me remember the name of the software. There is a free version of Chrome OS, and I'll talk about Chrome OS in a minute. There's mm-hmm. a free version of Chrome OS, and it's not the same as what runs on Chromebooks because the Google patents some of that stuff, but it's the mm-hmm. free version, and I believe, please don't quote me on it, but I believe that version will run on Mac. It's called Cloud Ready. That's what it is. So Cloud, Cloud, Ready. If you do a search for Chrome OS Cloud Ready, you'll find it. And I believe that it may run on a Mac. I have not tried it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Disclaimer. If it breaks, you get to keep both pieces, you know, et cetera. but I believe it is
maybe
possible.
Maybe it's not worth it because actually Chromebooks are quite cheap.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that in a second here. Yep. So but there are always options. All right, any other questions about Mac, or I'm going to jump into, and we can always, you know, if there's enough interest, you know, we can always do a session on Mac. I do have a Mac at work. It's just at work and I'm not there.
I actually do have one too. So if you need any, like to use any machine that is up to date or whatever, like you can let me, like maybe once this is finished, I can even, if somebody wants to actually touch a Mac, or I mean, not right now, obviously, but like, I don't mind going to the hub and showing you, you know, whatever.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So we can, you know, we can do a whole session on Mac if people are interested, once, you know, once we can get back together and I can actually have a Mac I can bring in. Any other questions about that? Once, going twice. All right. So the next thing I want to talk about is Chromebooks. And so somebody was asking, what is a Chromebook? A Chromebook is a laptop that is running a operating system called Chrome OS. So it's not running Windows, it's running something called Chrome OS. And that is an operating system that is designed by Google. And parts of Chrome OS are open source and parts of Chrome OS are not. That's why if you get a Chromebook versus the free thing I was telling you about earlier, there are certain things that don't work properly or don't work at all. Chrome OS is very much a web-based system. So you're essentially using all of Google's web-based services, so Google Docs, Google Sheets, that's like their Docs and Sheets, or their word processor and spreadsheets, YouTube, Google Hangouts for voice and video chat, Google Duo, which I think is replacing Hangouts. So it's very much using Google services, and The advantage of that is that very little gets actually installed on the machine, so they're not as susceptible to things like viruses. They tend to be fairly low power because they're not running a lot of stuff locally. A lot of it is sort of cloud-based. But the other side of it is, if you're not connected to the internet, you may not have as much functionality. So they've got a built-in screen reader on them called ChromeVox. It's Chrome, ChromeVox. And Chromebooks come in all shapes and sizes. So you can buy a Chromebook for $200 or $300. You're going to kind of get what you pay for. if you want a really cheap laptop that you're going to just, you know, use for email and that sort of thing, then, you know, it might be worth looking at them. The Chromebook that I've got here is actually one that's made by Google. So they're not all made by Google. So, you know, Acer makes them. I believe Asus makes them. Google themselves makes them. I don't know all the different brands, but there are certainly a fair number of brands of Chromebook. and they've all got sort of different specifications. When you pay for a more expensive Chromebook, you're going to get, more storage, more RAM, more, you know, faster processor, better graphics. You'll probably get one with a touch screen, whereas the cheaper ones don't tend to have touch screens. They don't have a lot of ports on them. So like the Chromebook that I've got here is a Google Pixelbook, and it's got, and it is actually one of the more expensive Chromebooks, and it's for ports. All it has is two USB-C ports. So USB-C is the newer USB connector that you can plug it in either way. You don't have to plug it in one way or the other. It's just, you can just plug the cable in however you want. So it's reversible. So not a lot, and obviously it connects via wireless to your network. If you happen to walk up to a Chromebook and you want to play with the speech to get speech to come on it's Control-Alt-Z, and that will turn on speech for you. And I'm actually going to demonstrate this in a second, but and then you can navigate through the system. So what I'm going to do, hold on, I'm just going to grab this Chromebook.
Alert, not connected to network. Alert, connecting to Halloween. Alert, connected to Halloween. Strong signal.
Okay, could you guys hear that?
Yes.
Yay, it worked. All right, so I just woke it up from sleep, and it started talking out. As I said, it connected to my network. So I'm going to just hit tab, and I'm probably going to have to enter my PIN or my password. Let me see.
Support us. Link. List programs and services. Link. List item.
Nope. Good. No.
Press search space to activate.
Okay. So actually I turned off the lock screen, so it didn't prompt me for my password when I booted up. When you boot up a Chromebook, it's going to ask you to log in with your Google account, or you can browse as a guest. If you browse as a guest, you don't have nearly the amount of options available to you. They do have built-in Google Assistant, so you can say the Google wake word, which I'm not going to say right now because half the things in my house will wake up and want me to start talking to them. But you can, you can talk to it and get results from the Google Assistant. Let's try it. Oh no, I'm going to turn off the. I'm standing up. I'm going to turn off the Google Assistant on my. There we go. I've got a Sonos speaker sitting here that's got the Google Assistant on it, so I turned it off so it doesn't listen to me. So if we do, hey Google.
Type alert. Launcher. Partial view.
What's the weather?
Start a voice query. Button.
Currently in Toronto, it's 6 degrees and cloudy. Tonight, it's predicted to be 6 with a chance of showers.
Okay, so you guys heard that? I mean, it was talking on top of itself, but yeah. So you get built-in Google Assistant, and so I'll just show you what it sounds like. I'm going to turn ChromeVox off and then back on again. So I'm going to do a Control-Alt-Z or Z to turn it off. Okay, that's off and on.
CNIB Foundation suspends drop in services and in-person programs at all locations until further notice. CNIB programs and services.
Sorry. So I was browsing through on the web. So I was on the CNIB webpage, and so you can navigate the system very much like you would any other, on any other system. You can. What you do is you hold down what is actually most often the caps lock key, but Google calls it the search key. You hold that down and you press other keys to get it to do things. So if I want to jump by heading, for example, I can hold down the search key and press H.
Breadcrumb, heading 2, exited banner, breadcrumb, navigation, main. CNIB Foundation suspends drop in services and in-person programs at all locations until further notice. Heading 1, exited navigation.
Okay, and then if I hold down the caps lock key again and press the down arrow, I'll just start moving down this article.
CNIB Foundation suspends drop-in services and in-person programs at all locations until further notice. Main, article. Content. Monday, March 16th, 2020, 9 a.m. Like many of you, the CNIB Foundation has been monitoring the
et cetera. So you'll notice that and I can also tab through links. So you'll notice that when I tab, I don't have stereo turned on, so you're not going to get this in stereo, but when I tab.
Virtual program offerings, link.
I get a.
Press search plus space.
I got like a ping noise in my left ear. Now you wouldn't, I said, I don't think this is broadcasting in stereo, so you wouldn't hear it on the left, but I heard the little ping in my left ear, which tells me that link is on the left side of the page. And then it reads the link.
CNIB Unbound, a virtual book club, link.
Okay, that pinged on the right, so it means that link's on the right side of the page. So it sort of gives you some interesting kind of spatial information about where you are on the page. I found that the unit actually works quite well. I was playing around in Google Docs earlier, and I was able to, I was just writing a quick document, and it really works quite well. It was reading as I was typing. I was able to get formatting information. It was telling me, when things were centered and when things were, the formatting of things. It does work with a Braille display. if you have one. So it will connect to various Braille displays. You tend to find Chromebooks a lot in education settings because they're, you know, not as easy to, you know, to hack, to, you know, for students to install whatever they want to on them. So you tend, like I said, you tend to see them more in education settings. Wanted to show you guys real quick too, if you want to bring up a menu of all the different commands that you can do on this thing, if you hold down again the search key, which is the caps lock key, and hit period, it's going to bring up a menu. So I'm just going to do that.
Chrome jump menu. Go to beginning of table, Chrome box plus alt plus shift plus left arrow. Menu item, 1 of 67.
So
press up or down arrow to navigate, enter to activate.
Okay, so what it's telling me is I'm in this menu and I've got 67 choices. These are what's called the jump menu. So these are all the commands to jump around the page. So jump by heading, you know, by button, by link, by table, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If I press the right arrow, I'll go to another category of menu.
Speech menu. Announce current battery status, Chrome box plus O greater than B. Menu item, 1 of 20.
Okay, so Chrome box
is down arrow to navigate, enter tab.
Sorry.
Alert, connecting to Halloween.
Oh.
Okay, this thing is doing something slightly weird with my Wi-Fi. It keeps connecting and disconnecting. I'm not quite sure why. But so again, you use the left and right arrow to move by categories and up and down to move by, you know, in within that category. So you can get a list of tabs that are open because it has, you know, multi-tab browsing. So I mean, like I said, if you're looking for something that's just sort of web connected and you want to use it for just, you know, some quick documents or browsing email, or what I've known some people to do is to buy a Chromebook, you know, a cheap Chromebook that they take on trips with them. So they don't want to take their really expensive, laptop. So they'll buy a Chromebook to take with them, you know, that it doesn't matter as much if something happens to it. So I've known some people to do that.
Yeah.
Yep. Again, was there a question?
You got to get to Wi-Fi in order to be able to access documents.
Yeah. The only thing is that you have to have Wi-Fi.
Well, honestly, I haven't tried this off Wi-Fi yet, but I do think the applications like Docs and that sort of stuff are actually cached offline. So if you're offline, you can still access things like Google Docs. You can't download anything from the web and you can't save anything to the web, but you can save things locally on the device. So, but obviously things like YouTube aren't going to work for obvious reasons.
Mm. Yeah. I'm thinking about one of the things that people quite often use when they're traveling is accessing local maps. And that's obviously an internet thing.
It is. Now, there are Chromebook apps that you can download, and actually the newer Chromebooks, this one, and I haven't tried it yet, this Chromebook will actually let you connect to the Google Play Store. So you can actually download Android apps and run them on the Chromebook, and they'll talk to you. Like I said, I haven't tried it yet. It's something I want to try. But in that case, you might be able to get offline, you know, some sort of offline mapping. Now, the question is, you know, would it be accessible? And that's another.
Hey, Jason.
But, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. This is Ryland Broom. I'm actually. I was.
Oh my God.
I know. I've been like stupid busy. But anyway, I just wanted to chime in on this portion because yes, you can access the Play Store using sort of the newer Chromebooks. However, you're accessing them through TalkBack.
Alexa, corazón.
And so what happens is you're using Chromebox, which is a screen reader, to get around your regular Chromebook, Chrome OS environment. And then you're switching to almost a different set of keyboard shortcuts in order to access the Android portion or the Android user environment that you're running those Android apps on that you download from the Play Store. So it's very interesting. I wouldn't say it's the easiest thing to do because you have to switch your knowledge of shortcuts and things like that and almost work in a bit of a different operating system. But it is there, and that's how you would use it.
Thanks for that. I wondered about that. I thought actually that's what might happen. So TalkBack, as Rylan was saying, TalkBack is the screener that you would get on Android. So on a Chromebook, as soon as you install and run an Android app, it fires up TalkBack. Now, Rylan, do you have to actually tell it to start TalkBack, or is it smart enough to know if you've got Chromebox running that you want TalkBack?
If I remember correctly, you actually have to have TalkBack installed.
Okay, so you'd have to install TalkBack from the Play Store, and then do you have to start it, or does it actually do that for you?
No, it should start automatically, because ultimately Chrome OS is sort of Android-based anyway.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
So it just depends on in what environment you're doing.
Okay.
You know, so if you choose to run the Linux side, then you also would have to install either Orca or eSpeak or something.
Yeah, and I didn't actually mention that, but the Chromebooks do have the ability to run Linux. So if you're a Linux, and we haven't even talked about Linux, I can at some point if anybody's interested. But Linux is another operating system that has accessibility available to you in it, and you can actually install Linux on a Chromebook. I haven't. I plan to play with it, but I haven't done that yet. This is a demo Chromebook that I got from work. Like I said, this particular Chromebook is a Google Pixel book, but there are a myriad number of Chromebook laptops out there. So I think that sort of covers mostly what I wanted to talk about. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else. Is there anything else people want to know about or want to see? I can't promise I'll know how to demo it, but I'll certainly try.
Jason, I've been hearing in the podcast about Orbit new Braille reader.
Yes. Orbit, who are the people that did the Orbit Reader 20, have released actually several new products. Well, they've announced several new products. They haven't released them yet. So there's the Orbit Reader 20 Plus, which is an Orbit Reader essentially with a note taker in it. Mm-hmm. There's the Orbit 40, which is a 40 cell display. There's a new Braille keyboard that you can buy for your phone. And actually I might buy one of these. It's
the one I want.
Yeah. So it's a $99 little Braille keyboard that you connect to your phone via Bluetooth, and it lets you control your phone. It lets you control your phone, and it also lets you type onto your phone using Braille, so it's got a little Braille keyboard on it. They announced them at CSUN. I wasn't at CSUN this year, but they announced them at CSUN, and yeah, that little Braille keyboard is like $99. So I think I may buy one.
I would like that too.
Yeah, if I get one, and if I do happen to get one, I will bring it to GGT.
And I can have a little demo, and then I can go for it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Any other questions about this or anything else?
I have a small question. And if you haven't used Chrome OS much, you might not know the answer to this, but I'm kind of curious about the difference between the way that Chromebox would handle complicated but accessible web pages versus the way that JAWS would. If you have any kind of observations on that, that'd be awesome.
I don't. Sorry, Rylan. I haven't spent enough time with this to really to know that much yet.
It's all good.
Yeah. You know, give me a little bit, and I'll probably have an answer for you.
Oh, it's all good, Jason. I figured I'd ask. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Jason, it's Tracy. Can you change the voice on the Chromebook? Like to the English accent, or you stuck?
Yes. Yes, you can. So the voice that I'm using is the US English Google voice right now. You can change it to the, the British English. I don't know if you can change it to other voices, like other completely different voices, like a cappella or anything like that. I haven't looked.
Okay.
But you definitely can change it to the Google, the Google British voice if you want it.
Okay, thank
you. Jason, you mentioned that Chromevox comes sort of preset out of the box with settings like you know, echoing your typing and you know, the general sort of reading parameters that most of us are used to. But are those things that are sort of setting editable?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So you can go, there's a whole Chromevox options screen that you can go into and change your typing mode and your, you know, key echo and all that stuff.
And the speaking rate and all that stuff.
Yep, and there's hotkeys to change speaking rate and all that stuff as well.
Okay, great.
Jason, this is Alan.
Yep.
How do you find the accessibility of the OS, like the learning curve for it?
I'm still learning it, but it seems pretty okay. If you're familiar with using the Chrome browser on Windows, you'll be a little bit further along. But Google has published some really good videos that they link. If you just do a search for Chromevox or Chromebook accessibility, or better yet, Chromebook screen reader, you'll find an article that Google did, and there's a video that's linked in there that's sort of a getting started video that's quite good, that kind of gets you up to speed. Now I should say that Chromebooks do also have a magnifier in them. I'm totally blind, so I'm not the person to comment on that, but it certainly does have a magnifier built in as well for those who need that.
Also, Google accessibility, if you search on YouTube, Laura, I forget her last name, she's in Google accessibility. She's done, I don't know how many zillions of videos on using Chromebox. And so you can actually watch videos of this person describing specific features and going through the operating system that way.
Yeah, for sure. The sort of the introductory video that I was mentioning is her. That's her that does that.
Okay. Well, yeah. She has a lot more as well. If you continue to search along that line.
Yep. Yeah, and they are really quite good. Any other comments, questions?
Well, Jason, I have another one then about the Chromebooks.
Yep.
If you're going to go for some like offline maps, they tend to chew up a bit of space. Do they have a fair bit of memory?
Again, you kind of get what you pay for. So they've got, I mean, I think the one that I've, the one, this one has, I think 128 gig SSD, solid state drive. But I mean, the cheaper ones I've seen as little as 32. So you just got to keep an eye on the, you know, keep an eye on the storage when you purchase one.
Okay. So similar to your normal laptops or even phones.
Yeah, pretty much.
More like a tablet or a phone, right? It's smaller than a laptop.
Yeah. And this one actually does have a touch screen on it, which is accessible. You can, you know, swipe around the touch screen and do things on the touch screen as well.
And they come with the usual bells and whistles like GPS and...
Well, it's a laptop, right? So they don't tend to have GPS, but
how do you navigate then?
Well, you have to do offline maps. But I think that was just somebody was just asking about maps, but
Actions menu. Click on current item Chromebox.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean offline maps, I mean you'd mainly be browsing the map. It doesn't actually have a built-in GPS receiver that I know about. It may. I haven't looked at it.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Jason, it's Ian. I don't have a question specifically on the Chromebook, but I did have a one more sort of tidbit of information that I thought might be useful for folks. The CNIB is going to be running a couple of workshops, just one-hour workshops, on using Zoom. So for those of you who are a little less comfortable with this platform that seems to be being rolled out ubiquitously for all kinds of things, they're running two. One is a sort of an introduction to Zoom and how it works on Tuesday the 24th from 1 to 2 p.m. Local time here, that's EST. And the other one is sort of a more advanced, how to use some of the more exotic tools in Zoom, primarily for, I think, primarily focused on sort of business communication, but the second session runs on the 31st, same time, I think. You can
and actually along those lines, sorry.
Yeah, you can connect with one of the folks at CNIB here in Toronto to register for that. And I will desperately try to find her name. Just a moment, hang on.
While Ian's doing that, I did send out, I think I sent it to the GTT list, Jonathan Mosen, who's a guy that's fairly well known in the blindness arena, guy out of New Zealand. He had he created an audio book on how to use Zoom. And given that so many people are, working remotely now, he's actually made that book available for free. So on the GTT list, I did post that. The GTT Toronto list. I don't know if that ever got posted to the national list. Albert, I don't know if you're around. If you could tell me if that ever got posted to the national list. And we wait. Or Albert scrambles to find his mute button.
I found the.
We all do it.
I found the contact information for those Zoom workshops. The contact is Kathy. My screen reader pronounces it Bytes. KATHY dot BEIT. TZ at CNIB.ca.
Yeah, and Jason, it's Albert. I did take your information and pass it on to the GTT folks, and we've had lots of people download that Jonathan Wilson book.
Cool. Awesome.
So those are a couple of great resources for getting connected in these weird times.
Excuse me, Ian. Can you please tell me what it's Kathy and her last name again?
It's pronounced Bytes, I think. Let me just go back and I'll spell it. BEITZ.
And that would be at
CNIB.ca.
Okay.
I have a phone number here as well. Just hang on a sec.
Okay.
223-1839.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. Somebody posted the assisted technology for the blind from the States. There's that very beginning Windows Expo.
Oh yeah.
And a few of us were on it. I was on it yesterday, and I'm going to continue because I'm one of these people that never got basic training in anything. Seems like I jumped in and then, so there's a lot of very basic things that I'm missing, and I'm really appreciating this woman, Kathy. So it was nice to feel connected to the Pacific time zone and everything.
Yeah. I meant to bring that up. So for anybody who didn't see this, Kathy Ann Murtha, who's, she's been around for a long time. She runs a company called the Access Technology Institute out of California. And she has, what she's known for is she's got all kinds of textbooks on Windows and Office applications and stuff that you can buy. So, using Word with JAWS and Excel with JAWS and all kinds of stuff. But she's doing these lunchtime, it's not lunchtime for us in Toronto, but there are these, she's calling them lunchtime classes. And they're just sort of basic Windows, Windows 10 tips. And I did post that to the list a few days ago. And they're, if you just do a search for, I think it's Access Technology Institute or Adaptive Technology Institute. And you'll find them, or like I said, I did post it to the list. So yeah, good resource for anybody who wants to sort of get more familiar with the basics of Windows 10.
Yeah, thanks for that.
And those run every...
There are 10 of them. She's missing one day, but it's from 3:30 to 4:30.
On what day?
Every day. She's doing every day. She's got a list.
Oh, every day. Okay.
Yeah, for 10 lessons, but she's missing one day, and I forget the day, but it lists it all down and what she's doing each day.
I think it's more than 10, though. It's like, I think she's going until April 18th, and it's at 12:30 p.m. Pacific every day. I'm not sure about the weekends, but it's until April 18th.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think it might be a week she's missing. There might be a whole week in there that she's not doing. Yeah. But if you go to the website, it's all there. I don't remember specifically either, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to Clearwater Beach anyway.
I think we posted
it. You get that one.
I'm pretty sure we've posted it on our GTT blog site just so that everybody can get access to it.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
Does anybody else have anything they want to share with the group at this point, or have we pretty much run the gamut here? Well, sounds like we pretty much rolled it. That's great.
All right.
Good session,
thank
guys.
You.
Well, listen, this has been a great session. Thank you all for contributing. It's always great to have a lot of people on the line so we can share a lot of information. And thanks again to Jason for looking at Chromebooks and the Mac OS for us. Thanks, Jason.
No problem.
Thanks, Ian. Jason.
All right.
You guys rock. Thanks a lot.
Good night.
Thanks.
Good night,
everybody.
Bye.
Night, guys. Take care of yourselves.